Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, and joining me from Defector, Drew McGarry demanded to return to the show to give his takes about J.J. McCarthy. I said, no, I've got way too many guests. I'm really busy. He said, no, we're going to do this. So he forced his way back. No, seriously, I needed to get you back, Drew, because we did a podcast right before the draft where you talked about ranking your quarterbacks, all the things that you wanted, all of your hopes and dreams. And, not all of them came true. So I need to know your reaction, how you're feeling, and then we could talk about the future of the Minnesota Vikings. But take me through it. How do you feel?
Right. So I that podcast, I was like, dead certain that we were getting May, right? I was like, we're trading the farm. We're going up. That's who Kevin O'Connell wants. He made it plain, you know, with the church thing. I think that's still true. I think May was his favorite by far. So, and then they didn't trade up. And so I'm sitting there on draft night and, you know, the clock's ticking down on the Commanders. And I'm like, well, that's probably not going to happen. And then I was like, well, maybe they'll be stupid and take McCarthy at 2. And then, like, Schefter later on reported, he's like, well, they only considered Daniels or McCarthy at 2 and not Drake May. And I don't know if I believe that or not. Whatever, who cares? Anyway, so then the clock's ticking on New England. And as the clock's going down, like, I'm checking, because, you know, the telecast is always behind Twitter, right? It's like, if you, like, Albert Breer was breaking those picks. Like, Albert Breer is useless, like, in general. But, like, for this, he would have the picks before they're gone. So so I could see that, or I could see Schefter saying, oh, no, the Patriots are sticking and picking. By the time there was, like, 6 or 5 minutes left on the clock, so I was like, oh, all right. So then 4 and 5 happen, and those teams stick. And that's when... So at the beginning, I was like, all right, well, we're gonna have to trade up a shitload to get McCarthy. And I guess I'll be like, it's one of the things where I would force myself to be okay with it and be like, okay, all right. And then it was like, oh, wow, like, we're gonna get him for nothing, actually. And you know, and I do value 4th and 5th round picks, because sometimes they turn into serviceable guys, you know. So like you know, Stephon Diggs was a 5th round pick, right? So but they trade up with the Jets and they get McCarthy, but they still have 23. So I'm like, oh, okay, so they get that and a defender, and I don't have to delude myself into thinking that we will have a passable defense with the free agent tweaks that we made, but we still don't really have a stud cornerback. And we have a couple of good edge rushers in free agency, but, you know, they're small sample size, blah, 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 blah. So we go up and we get Turner, and I'm like, ah, bitching. So I'm happy. I was more vocal. I was more pumped up when they announced the Turner selection. And my son was with me. My son likes to watch me watch the Vikings because he likes to laugh at all the things I do. And they always make fun of me because, like, whenever something really good happens, I yell, boosh! And that's what I did when they drafted Turner, and my son just broke down in hysterics. And so I was like, all right, that's cool. And then every data humper was like, they tried too much. And I'm like, whatever, go to hell, Nerdlinger. And so I ended that night. It was like, it was a thing where it's very rare when I go into a Vikings draft expecting one thing and getting a different thing, but the different thing I get is actually quite good and perhaps better, right? And it was proof to me, particularly after you spoke to Kwesi yesterday. I know you bumped me for Kwesi, and I forgive you, but like when I was listening to Kwesi and his thought process and how they went about this draft, it was clear to me that they had a vision, that Kwesi was not going to pay a lot for this muffler, right? He wasn't going to, like, the final supposed offer we had to Drake May was one that I absolutely could have lived with because they would have gotten a couple day two picks, right? That would have been pretty cool. I was ready for them to give four first rounders. It was like, I was not ready for them to give Jefferson or anything like that. But so when they, you know, when you had Kwesi on and he was explaining, you know, sort of his process and all that stuff, I realized, okay, this is someone who is smarter than I am. And that is like, that's a very comforting thought because that's not always true when you're an NFL fan and your GM is Dave Gettleman. And he's like, oh, this guy was at the Senior Bowl and he smelled terrific and we had to draft him. Like, that sucks. Like, you know, that guy's a moron and you don't want that guy to be your GM. Well, with Kwesi, you know, in the first draft he had, you know, he had a shitty draft. You know, he trades down to take Lewisine and like everyone's just let down. And it played out exactly like that draft night. Like it was just as crappy, like in practice as it was the night that it happened. And so it's like, okay, does this guy actually know what he's doing? Or is he a politician? Is he a fraud? And when he said to you yesterday, when he said to you, we don't want to be the reason these guys fail, I'm not certain I've ever heard a football person say that. Like, Sean Payton's never going to say that, ever. Sean Payton is like, you do what I say. If you don't, you're going in a barrel and we're going to throw you off of the falls. Like, that's Sean Payton, right? But like, for Kwesi to say, look, we have to set everything up, you know, so that we give these people the best chance to succeed, not guarantee they're going to succeed. But, you know, with that thought in place, with the resources that McCarthy has in place and with the coaching that's in place, I think that I'm completely rambling here. But so I think O'Connell is like, yes, I would accept J.J. McCarthy and I can work with J.J. McCarthy. He's all right. But May would have been my preference, but I can work with this McCarthy kid. And I think that I think that everything kind of turned out for the best. I'm very, very optimistic. And like McCarthy, like before the draft, I was like, well, I don't want that guy. He's a white guy who looks like me. He's a dip. He's not gonna be any good. But now that he's on the team, let's go. I'm ready to go. Let's fire it up.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there, but let
is
me start.
There, is yeah, there really?
There is. There's a lot of things that we could touch on from there.
Sure.
One thing I've heard Kevin O'Connell say is that teams fail quarterbacks more than quarterbacks fail teams. Now, I don't know how deeply I agree with that. I think sometimes you just draft a guy that can't play and the guys who are really good overcome. But I also think there's a guy on the roster who was completely failed by his franchise in Sam Darnold with the New York Jets. And he could have at least been a better version than he was with the Jets. And we saw that a little bit in Carolina. We'll probably see it this year if he has to play, that he could have been a good or serviceable quarterback. And with the Jets looked very, very bad. Geno Smith might make an argument that he was failed by that franchise as well, et cetera.
He was, right?
Yeah. Oh, no question.
But that's such a classic. It's such a classic fan argument. The nature versus nurture thing. Like, okay, well, you know, would Tom Brady, you know, have been great if he had been drafted by X dip team and not, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, had built, you know, and so you can have those conversations, you know, until you die, and people do. But, you know, to hear it from O'Connell, I think is actually very interesting because he would have seen though teams fail those players in real time, you know, and that I think carries a bit more weight with me than me just saying it, you know, because all I do is watch the games, you know.
Right. I mean, he was in a locker room with maybe Mark Sanchez. He was in Washington when they drafted Dwayne Haskins and pushed him to start maybe earlier than they necessarily should have.
At Dan Snyder's behest, because his kid went to high school with Haskins. That's a true story.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of true stories I'd love to know from the Dan Snyder era. But, you know, I think that Kevin O'Connell's personal experience with this as a third round draft pick who had talent coming out of college, didn't really make it in the NFL. And I think that the things that he saw and the things that he experienced impacted him a lot. And yeah. I feel like what he's trying to do is give somebody else the experience that he always wanted from a coach, to have someone really sit down with him and say, this is how you play quarterback. I will guide you. Believe in me. Trust in me. Rather than maybe the way that a lot of teams used to do it. And I think we've seen a lot of coaches start to form that bond with their quarterback. And with O'Connell, we don't have to guess if he can do this. We've already seen him do this with a quarterback who was rather skittish under his previous coach. And by the end, Kirk Cousins, I thought, was playing some of his better football. I don't think it was the best football he had ever played, but I think it was the most confident he had ever played it.
But like the Chicago game last year, like he played awful in that game. Like he was crap. So it's like, you know, he was always streaky. So there was always, when he had the hot streak, it was like, oh, okay, he's figured it out. Well, no, the guy's 36 years old. Like, it's not, he's like, I kept having this fantasy that was good, like suddenly become, have his Mark Rippon year where he's just, okay, he's finally got it. And it snaps for 1 year and you win a Super Bowl, and then he, you know, then he falls off a cliff or whatever. But that just wasn't what was going to happen. So
the 1991 Mark Rippon year, really special. Yeah. It's a great reference. It's very relevant to.
My apologies to the younger listeners.
My point was just that we saw a more confident Kirk Cousins, a Kirk Cousins that was leading a locker room and marching out on the field each week as if he was the guy for the franchise. And the relationship with he and O'Connell was building it together. And that's what you want with JJ McCarthy. Of course, it's going to take a lot of time for him. And so I think this is a unique situation to drop McCarthy into. I was thinking about the best and worst situations for all the quarterbacks. I think most people might pick Penix is the worst situation. I think it's actually Denver, because Sean Payton is not like Kevin O'Connell. I think that Sean Payton and that Denver team might be very hard for Bo Nix to drop into. But
the roster sucks. It's a shit team. It's a bad team.
It is. And not only that, but also, you know, Sean Payton, a guy who made his entire bones based off of one of the greatest quarterbacks in history. I'm not certain that that was all Sean Payton. Maybe he thinks it was. I don't know. If Patriots coaches could think that they were responsible for Brady, then, you know, who knows about the ego. But I guess the whole point is just that Kevin O'Connell has this belief that you can push the odds in your favor by handling a young quarterback in a certain way. And to me, that's the best opportunity any quarterback is ever going to get. So even if we have questions about JJ McCarthy and about, hey, can he actually be the guy? Because he's never had to really do that before since high school at Michigan. He never had to do that at a high level where the offense is on his shoulders. I think that they're going to give him the best chance to do that. And that's why I want to throw out a lot of the stuff that we thought previously. And I think you can do that. I think you're allowed to do that. To analyze
the draft.
Right. To analyze the draft, to go, well, here's kind of what I think before draft night. Then it all plays out and you go, I don't care what I thought before draft night, because now we're going to find out how this goes for McCarthy.
It's ephemeral. It's not, you know, you're buying time. Until you're burning the clock until the draft, then the draft happens, and then it's like, oh, okay, these are our guys. Now I can begin the process of getting all hyped up for the guys that are here, because I'm not going to be like, well, he's going to suck. Like, I got a season to watch. I got to get hyped up for this shit.
Well, then, what are you telling yourself about McCarthy then? What have you come in the last week? Because you did get bumped for Kwesi, so you had a little extra time to review, analyze some film, and so forth. So what have you been talking yourself into then with McCarthy?
Well, there's a few things. One is like, oh, okay, well, he didn't have to be the man at Michigan. But like, when you are the quarterback of a nationally ranked program, you are you automatically assume pressure, right? You are the face of the team, you're the leader of the team. People look to you. And so, you know, the fact that he wasn't throwing for 400 yards a game or whatever, I'm able to forgive that. You know, I liked seeing it from May. Like, May had to carry that North Carolina team the 2 years that he was there. And he did it, you know, as a freshman and a sophomore. That's pretty ludicrous, right? That's why I liked it. And then also, you know, like May, McCarthy's young. And if Kevin O'Connell believes that he can, because Kevin O'Connell was talking about how he could fix footwork, but there's clearly there's some belief within him that he can make McCarthy's throws more varied. He can give him more of a bag. I'm too old to use that term, but like he can help him develop his toolkit. Like, and he's young enough and he's raw enough and he's willing enough. Like, the, you know, I think, you know, I always, you know, I looked at McCarthy's face and, you know, I saw Zach Wilson for obvious reasons. They're both sort of, you know, all American, you know, fresh faced white boys and all that stuff. But the knock on Zach Wilson was that he didn't actually like do anything. He was like lazy. But there does not seem to, that does not seem to be a problem with JJ McCarthy, who's also he's already engaged. So it's like, he's got that tucked away. He's got that locked down. So he doesn't have to worry about finding like a spouse or a home or any of that stuff. He can just focus on the football shit and he's good to go. So I like that part. The other thing is that I know the Vikings have talked about it. I know you've talked about it with me, where they don't want to rush him. You know, they want to have clear benchmarks for when he is ready to go. I suspect, and I texted you this when I wasn't drunk, but I wasn't sober. I think that they have benchmarks in mind for McCarthy, but I think that they suspect that they are benchmarks that he will be able to clear very easily and very quickly, given his natural talent and his work ethic. So it would not shock me if he was the starter right away in week one. And if that actually comes to pass, if he actually does win the job over Darnold, you know, sort of ahead of schedule, I won't consider that a desperate act. I will consider that to be very encouraging, because it meant that when he got to training camp and when he got out on the field with his peers, his new peers, everyone was like, oh, he can play. And that's like a big deal, because the opposite happened with Mond, right? You told me this. Like, he gets to camp and he sucks right away. Like, it's evident. And Mike Zimmer would, you know, Mike Zimmer was a bastard about it, but he was correct, right? He was like, if you watch the practice, you'll see this guy sucks. He can't play. And if the opposite turns out to be true of JJ, and he is elevated to the starting position and he's left out of like preseason, like if O'Connell's like, you know what, I don't want to screw this up. Like, I don't want, like, if he tears an ACL in a preseason game, I don't want that happening. Like, if he sees actual, like, if he's starting to get excited and we haven't played the schedule yet, that's good. And I think there is a non-zero chance of that happening. I'm not going to do what I did last podcast and say, that's what's going to happen. Like, I'm, you know, the cockiest fan in the world. I think there is a good chance of that.
I think so too, because there are parts of his game that have to be fixed, as far as like, he is a pitching machine set on super fast all the time when it comes to throwing the ball. But I don't think that's as big as a concern if you're throwing him in right away. You can let him figure that out on the field and throw some interceptions and figure out the types of throws he's going to have to make in the NFL. I think
you kind of have to, you know?
Yeah, I think everybody's okay with that, right? I mean, I think if he's playing week 1, 2, 3, and he throws 4 interceptions in those first couple of games, none of us are going to say bust. We're going to say, all right, well, you can't make that throw. You can't make that play in the NFL, and you're figuring that out on the fly. What it would say about him is that all the things that everybody talked about, like, this guy's a master of football, he's all ball, he's going to study like crazy, you know, all those things, that he would be able to understand the offense to where people are supposed to be lined up. And that is a huge deal. You're supposed to be over there. I'm supposed to be over there. Here's how we adjust the protection at the line of scrimmage to work with the center, get the mic point out there, understand route details, understand when you drop back, where are the areas of the field that your eyes need to be. And then look, if he shuffles his feet too much in the pocket, trying to create some room for himself, you can go back on tape and try to work through that. If he tries to throw it through the middle linebacker and hits him right in the chest for an interception, you can go, hey, next time we're going to have to work on arcing the ball. That's after practice stuff. That's the year between rookie year and year two, where he's getting with his quarterback coach and he's working on that. And they're giving him all these talking points, or I shouldn't say that, but working out points that he's going to have to, improve on. But it's all about the mental part, I think, and the are you ready emotionally to deal with this as like leading an entire team? Do you show when you get out there that you could be the guy right away, or do you need more time? So I think that it is possible. I'm always, hey, let's err on the side of sitting the guy when there isn't some huge pressure to throw him right in. And that's why you got Sam Darnold. But as far as them making that decision, I feel like Kevin O'Connell is the best suited to decide, is he really ready to go out there and lead that entire team?
That was the other thing that I felt was very encouraging about the draft and about this entire offseason, where, and I think you felt this too, where we weren't sure if they were going to make decisions based on what was best for the long term or based on whether or not they could keep their jobs in the interim, right? I believe it's confirmed they have 4-year contracts, Kwesi and Kevin, correct? They are definitely 4-year contracts.
It was reported. No one's ever said for sure. They didn't leave their contract sitting out at TCO Performance Center for me to check.
I'll put it to you this way. They did not act like men who believe that they will be fired if they go 7-10 again next year, right? And that's good. Like, that's really important, because obviously the Spielman era was just, was just polishing the same turd over and over again, just so you would look, fairly decent every year, and you would still have fan favorites back and all that crap. But, to have them willing, to have Kwesi and Kevin both willing to, really overhaul the roster the way that they should have. I could tell in your interview with Kwesi last week that I think finally having the yoke of Kirk off of him has freed him to be himself. Like, he doesn't sound robotic. He sounds very natural. And I think a big part of it is that, he now has the confidence, not just that this is, that this is his team now, but that ownership has his back and is encouraging him to make these moves. And that I think is why I feel very good. McCarthy could still suck. Dallas Turner could, tear his ACL in camp. Like, all the bad things can happen, right? That just does. But I was very, very pleased by that. And then I liked the bomb of the draft too. But I always talk myself into the bomb of the draft every year.
Of course. Well, I think with Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, for a long time here, he's been walking a bit of a tightrope, because if we can infer some things about someone with his analytics background, when he got here, he probably assumed that the team wouldn't win 13 games. And then as he watched them win 13 games, he was probably thinking, I know what our point differential is. I know how hard this is to repeat. I know this probably isn't going to get us where we want to go. And so I'm seeing like potential setbacks. Then he was allowed to take apart major parts of the roster. And last year when Kirk Cousins gets hurt, he may have been thinking the same thing that we were thinking, is like, well, you're going to draft a quarterback pretty high. And as you win games with Josh Dobbs and you get farther away from that, it had to be, I think, a lot of anxiety there. Like, are we going to get our quarterback? Is Kirk going to end up coming back at this expensive contract and all those things? And now that the decision has been made and they have the quarterback and they got another player who he clearly really loved, and compared to the Rudy Gobert trade of getting Dallas Turner, or I made the connection, I think. He didn't directly say that, but it wasn't hard to put two and two together. But I think that this is now him. You know, they've been saying, yeah, like, let Kwesi cook sort of thing. It's like, well, he was working with some ingredients there that maybe belonged to the previous cook. And now he's got all of his. And this may pass or fail. We'll see as it goes. But this is his creation now, this entire roster. And I was trying to think, how many players are even on the roster that were here when they got here in 2022? I mean, Jefferson, like Harrison Smith, of course, Harrison Smith. But there's really not that many. And so this is his plan and this is his approach. And I think that he's more comfortable with that and probably more comfortable with $100 million of cap space to use for next season too.
Well, that was the other thing is because, you know, obviously, you know, before we took JJ, the Falcons took Penix, and, you know, it was a thing where I didn't laugh. I was just like, I was stunned. And I was like, that's really stupid. But then I was also just so grateful it wasn't me. Like, it's not my problem. Like, way to go, Falcons. You're really shitting your own coffee, but that's your problem now, not mine. Whereas my team, you know, I think there's a trajectory. I was very annoyed at some of the post-draft analyses from, you know, the dread anonymous scouts or, you know, data humpers like Barnwell, where they're like, well, I don't really see the foundation here. And it's like, have you ever watched this team play? Like, are you familiar with this roster at all? Because I see an extremely clear foundation. And like, I think the biggest problem that I have right now going into, you know, this season is like the free agent market at defensive tackle is crap. Guard, they can probably find another guard. Third wide out, they can find a third wide out. Like, they're not all pros sitting there, you know, waiting around for a phone call, but like, they're fine. They're usable. And I like Brandon Powell anyway. So I like where the team is. And if they go 7-10 this year, it will not be nearly as annoying a 7-10 to endure as last year's 7-10. Cause that was an annoying team. And that was an annoying season.
I think somebody brought this up to me about US Bank Stadium the last few years and about how it just didn't have the same pop at times. I mean, in 2022, there was a lot of close games, but it felt like there was just the enthusiasm was kind of gone at a lot of times. And, you know, you're going to cheer because you're there, but not that same power that building can have.
Right.
And
you're running in place. You know, you've seen it before.
And these fans know it. Like, you know, they could sense it. I mean, I don't think that the Vikings fan base is just show up at the stadium and fight people in the stands and scream for everything.
Yeah, they don't.
Shout out Philadelphia, though. Yeah. Like, you have to respect them. But, you know, I just think that this fan base is, when you're watching something that you know is kind of mid, then it's like, well, okay, if it's going well, I'll cheer. And if it's not, it isn't. I think a 7-10 season could be a louder US Bank Stadium and more energy in that place for what can be in the future. And this new approach, new quarterback, new fresh feeling to the entire franchise than it has been before because of all the things you laid out, including the foundation that they have built. And I went through the list in the Friday mailbag of all the players that are going to be here for at least the next 2 years. It's hard to project any farther than that. And there's a lot. So when you talk about this Dallas Turner move and the foundation that they have built now to add pieces, a lot of the work has been done during the competitive rebuild, whether it's just finding an Ivan Pace kind of at random in the UDFA, or if it's, you know, signing Jonathan Grenard to a big contract or Andrew Van Ginkel. Like, these are multi-year players, and some of them are very young, like Jordan Addison, that they can build off of and build around, that even this starting lineup is capable of competing for a playoff spot. You add to that, and you have potentially, if they can utilize, you know, McCarthy's rookie contract and he's good, potentially a consistent contender. Like, it's not that hard to see how you could be okay with getting Dallas Turner and giving up some future draft capital because you have so many of those pieces in place.
Well, yeah. So there's two things there. One is that the UDFA thing with Pace and with Gabriel Murphy, like, I don't think that is entirely luck. I think, you know, this is when, you know, being in the top two of the NFLPA survey, you know, 2 years in a row, since its inception, you know, it starts to pay off because this is where rookies want to go. And if they're undrafted, then they have even more, you know, they have the freedom to be like, okay, because, you know, McCarthy said, yes, I want to go here, and all the other rookie QBs do. But those are guys who were going to be drafted, whereas Gabriel Murphy can kind of choose, or you know, Ivan Pace could have chosen. So, you know, that it pays off on that end with undrafted free agents, with regular free agents, of course. And then also, I think that there is the possibility that Kwesi, you know, we lose on the trade charts by getting Dallas Turner. But not only do we have, obviously, cap space going forward, but it is possible that because the salary cap will grow ever larger, and it will, because this league just makes money just hand over fist, and it's just going to grow and grow and grow, that there is a potential future where draft picks aren't quite as valuable as they are right now, because the surplus and savings that you get from having a guy on a rookie deal doesn't matter quite as much, because you're going to, like, most teams will have a lot of free capital at the end of any given season if the salary cap goes up $30 million literally every year or something like that. So I think there's a possibility of that there. It doesn't mean that a rookie quarterback contract is not going to be invaluable pretty much, you know, through every CBA going forward. But I do think that there's some of that there. And we suck at day two picks anyway. So
recently there have not been Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, or even the Stephon Diggs in the later rounds. But
right.
Somebody brought up a good point in the mailbag about how if you looked at the consensus board that Arif Hasan puts together and where these players were ranked that they got, even some of the UDFAs, that they actually acquired players that were either equal or a little better than what they had as draft capital, but some of them just ended up being undrafted free agents. And a major part of it is just investment. So they are willing to give Ivan Pace, I think it was a lot of money, like $300,000, which is unusual. I think it was something like that. Right. Yeah, he certainly did. Oh yeah. It's the best $300K they ever could have spent. But that is a sign of intent. It's not just random UDFAs that pop onto the roster. It's we're going to plop down the cash to get this player that maybe usually we think would have been drafted or had higher on whatever board, that sort of thing.
Will's willing to spend it too. That's good.
Right. And the difference between somebody who's taken in the sixth round and a UDFA is very, very small. So if you're looking at it as, all right, we don't have as much draft capital at the back end, but we're going to spend a ton to get the top priority free agents, our odds between Mr. Sixth Rounder, who's the 200 whatever draft pick, and Mr. Priority free agent that we paid $300,000 for is very little as far as odds that player will turn out. So that might be a little way of kind of counterbalancing just what they gave up. Plus, I've looked at it as Dallas Turner's a pretty rare athlete. It's a rare player. It's not somebody that you just sort of show up to the draft and like, oh, where are we picking? 23rd, let's just get an elite pass rusher. I mean, he was a top 10 player on consensus board. NFL.com's comp for him was Brian Burns, who I believe is presently the second highest paid player in the league at that position. So difference makers to me are much more important than what we're doing at the back end of the draft is how I would approach it. That's how I would look at it. And I think in this case, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah did too, even if, draft charts didn't like it.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, it's 1 year, right? Like it's the next draft. We didn't have any day two picks this draft, but we had two ones, right? Which is like, okay, that's fine. That evens out more than enough, right? And then next year we still have the one. And, you know, I'm going off of what in my mind we were going to hypothetically give up just to get McCarthy. And I thought that would almost certainly include next year's one. Well, it didn't. It barely included anything. So we have that. And then we don't have any day two picks, but then you get the full complement of them in 2026. So it's like, it's really not this insanely fallow period that you have to endure. It's not what the Browns are going through right now with like maybe the worst trade in NFL history, like potentially the worst trade. Like Russell Wilson is there. That was an awful trade too. But you know, Cleveland like has the bones to have a playoff team, but right now they don't have the ability to finish the job because they traded for a sex criminal. So it's like, oh, shit. You know, and we're not in that sort of morass. And that is very, very good. I'm looking at this. There's a lot of negative reinforcement here. It's like, well, at least we're not the Falcons. At least we're not the Browns. And, you know, it also, if we go 7-10 next year, and by the way, I think we could do better than that. I think we could go eight or nine games. But if McCarthy, you know, has a couple of you know, dud games or what, you know, a couple of rookie moments, but he has a couple signature wins. Like, if, you know, if he beats the Packers 38-7 at home, and if he has a huge upset against, I don't remember who's on the schedule, but, you know, a Super Bowl favorite, and they beat them, you know, like that is enough for me to go on. Like, I can chew on that through an entire offseason to come.
Oh, I think so too. And sometimes we just don't give fans enough credit for seeing the future when it comes to this.
That's right. Fans rock. Yeah.
Yeah. Go fans. Go fans. They should subscribe. But I think that what everyone can see now is that it will take time, and that they have this operation that now looks more like the Eagles, looks more like the 49ers than it looks like, say, Cleveland, as you're mentioning,
right,
with an albatross quarterback contract that you're never going to get out of.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is how some teams look. I mean, the New Orleans Saints, like, are the New Orleans Saints a relevant NFL franchise?
I have no idea what the Saints are doing.
Just a squad, just like Derek Carr and a bunch of guys. I did want to talk about the Atlanta situation.
Now, sure.
I think that, Atlanta might maybe have an idea here of how long this Kirk thing could last, and that may have influenced it. But you were talking about if, you know, the Penix and McCarthy and that decision never had to get made from the Vikings. And I don't know if it was a battle of, hey, this guy would have liked one better than the other. I think it was you're on two different plans if you have those guys. Like, Michael Penix is, you play day one, and it's like, let's go win. Like, you're in charge. You're the man. We don't have to teach you a whole lot, but we also probably can't fix a whole lot because you're 24 years old. So fire away, buddy. Whereas McCarthy is like, well, everybody, might take a minute. Be patient. The kid can't grow facial hair. Let's see how it goes, says two people who can't grow facial hair.
I can't. It's true.
Nowhere close. It looks horrendous.
But it's assumptions, though, isn't it? Because, like, you know, CJ Stroud was the youngest successful quarterback in NFL history. He's 22 years old. Like, so you don't necessarily know, because Penix has flaws in his game, right? That's why he was regarded as a borderline first round pick and not a surefire top 10 pick, even though that's what he ended up being. So there are definitely going to be things that he has to work on, because, you know, and you've said it over and over again, you know, it's like going from high school to medical school. It's like, it's, the degree of difficulty is just so much more pronounced. And you can't predict. It's why the draft is, you know, as unreliable as it is, you cannot predict how much, a supposedly matured game in college is going to work at the NFL level. Cause, you know, you always hear that pro ready thing, and it's always bullshit, right? It's like, he's the most pro-ready quarterback. It's Chris Wanky. Like, well, nope, he sucked. So, yeah, and I'm not saying any of this to disagree with you. I'm just saying that, you know, particularly because I'm someone who said, well, they're definitely going to draft Drake May. And I'm someone who after the first half against New Orleans was like tweeting, like, Kwesi got this guy Josh Dobbs for nothing, and like, I think he's the guy. Like, I'm that kind of fan. So my takes are not terribly reliable here.
I wouldn't say you were the only one, at least somewhat fooled by Josh Dobbs. I guess I probably tossed the name Jake Delhomme out there at some point, but sure. It did look so good against the New Orleans Saints. He really was terrific.
Yeah, well, the Falcons game, like, he was a marionette, but he was, like, fantastic. You know, it was great.
Yeah, and then it quickly turned back into Josh Dobbs, quarterback, yep, who was 2-9 when he got here. But the Atlanta thing is going to be it's going to be interesting to follow because a part of me wants to say, you know, like you said, it's Atlanta's problem. But then there's another part that is so intrigued by Michael Penix, and I liked him so much through this process. I thought that he might be the guy for them, maybe, and be the right fit. And he ends up going there. And now he's got to deal with this very strange situation with Kirk Cousins. Does it matter to you at all what happens there, what happens with Cousins?
No, not particularly. I will say that my first job, I got an ad job out of college, and they gave me, it was called an assistant account executive, and I was there to replace someone they were going to get rid of, but they had not gotten rid of her yet. And I was not supposed to tell her that I was there to take her job, even though it was like plainly evident. Like, she's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, I'm working on the account and just here to help. And I couldn't say anything. It was like really weird and shitty. And so that's probably what Michael Penix feels right now. But other than that, you know, I think, I will always think of that situation in terms of bullets dodged, right? Because especially if it turns out that the Falcons gave Kirk all that money only to realize that he is not fully healthy. Like to me, that would be just a catastrophic fuck up, just like a remarkable, just an insane fuck up that like can't be undone. Like the 28-3 of offseason moves, like it would be just brutal. And so I would be curious about it as a league, you know, as a fan of the league and as someone who follows everything. But I won't ever feel bad for anybody there, you know?
Yeah. Something I thought of throughout the offseason with Cousins in Atlanta is that there is no real revenge narrative for anybody for him leaving, or even when he comes back. I do want to see him play against Mike Zimmer in Dallas. That is, there's some conflict, but
Zim will do well in Dallas too. Like he'll be head coach of that team by week 11.
That's not impossible. That would be that's for the bold predictions article in July.
But is that bold? Is it really that bold to say
bold-ish?
He's going to get bold-ish. The shit done?
Yeah. I mean, they're a good team. But if they hit any stumbles, I think Jerry Jones probably wanted Zim there just in case he needs to turn it over to an old ball coach. But there is really no juice to a Kirk Cousins revenge narrative. No. I couldn't help myself when it happened because it was just so shocking. And then the statement that his agent puts out, it all feels just like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode or something. You know, they make the pick and it's and then Kirk is going like this with his face.
Well, and and Falcons leadership handled it so poorly after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, well, who's running things here? You know? And it was right after they were like, well, we can't hire Bill Belichick because we're a family here. And meanwhile, the family, like apparently they're all sleeping in different levels of the house.
Well, but doesn't that make you think that they know something that they can't say?
No, because that's giving them too much credit because of the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay, fair enough. Thinking about the health issue.
Yeah. I mean, but and then they draft a QB who has health issues of his own. So I think it's Occam's razor here. I think the simplest explanation is that they're stupid. And that's the track record of the Atlanta Falcons, correct? So that's where I land on it. And again, the high of getting rid of Kirk has not worn off in the slightest. And in fact, the draft only sort of enhanced that euphoria within me. It's like, oh my God, we didn't get the new quarterback I thought we might get, but we got a new quarterback and he can actually outrun like a security guard at a mall. Like that is cool. I'm very pleased about that. And like he can definitely throw the ball in the vicinity of Justin Jefferson, which is pretty much all I require. And like he can do that with Addison too. And you saw the pit tape with Kenny Pickett, right? So you know how Addison has a history of bailing out quarterbacks. So this is good. I'm very pleased.
The ball tracking is absolutely elite.
You want bold prediction?
Go ahead. Make a bold prediction.
TJ Hawkinson will start week one. That's my
bull. I don't think so. I don't know.
I think it's like, you know what I think it is? I think it's you know how airlines make it so that like you'll be on a flight and they'll be like, turns out we're going to get at the gate 20 minutes early. Well, that's built into the model, right? They build in that your flight is going to be 4 hours when it's really going to be 3 hours and 15 minutes. So they have a buffer so that they can fuck up, right? I think it's the same thing with Hawkinson where they're like, well, look, we had to delay one surgery. And so, you know, he might not be ready for camp. Don't get your hopes up. And that's all, you know, it's all under promise and over deliver. And that's what I think is going to happen. And if I'm wrong, you can roast me for it.
Okay. It's bold. I feel like I've covered enough ACLs to kind of have a sense for the timeline. And I think it's going to be a little bit longer than week one. Maybe you'll be right. Maybe he'll recover. He's from Iowa.
Sounds like you're informed, which is like,
Well, you know, the injury timelines are never easy, but
I know.
But how about this? So, you know, you do contact me occasionally about the Minnesota Vikings, and sometimes you have ideas and say, what about this? What about that? So what's left? What's left in that idea brain that you want me to write about? You want me to talk about? Like, what do you want to hear about now going forward?
I mean, I'm very interested to hear about Murphy, and I'm very interested to hear about Levi Drake Rodriguez. And I'm biased on Rodriguez because it turned out my old defector colleague, Kaylin Kaler, who's at The Athletic now, she did a running feature for us that she brought over to The Athletic called Prospect X, where she would profile an athlete in the draft, someone low level that she wouldn't name, but she would say, this is the best kept secret of the draft. Now, the guys that she has profiled so far, one of them got hurt last year, so he couldn't play. Then the other one, I think I can't even remember. But anyway, the point is that, you know, she did a profile of Rodriguez where he was, you know, the polar opposite of JJ McCarthy. And that's sort of the beauty of the draft, the great human interest of the draft, where you have a guy like McCarthy who is a blue blood through and through, you know, looks like every other guy I've ever seen on the island of Nantucket, like went to an IMG school, went to Michigan, was the absolute homecoming king there, won a national championship. And then you have this other guy who goes to colleges you've never heard of and has to fight the idea that the NFL people would notice him and consider him perhaps as an undrafted free agent was like, that was a big deal. And he like busted his ass and ate as much candy as he could to gain weight so that he would be at NFL weight to be that sort of guy. You know, it's very, very easy for me because I'm a fan and because I'm irrational to be like, well, you know, we had another undrafted guy from a tiny Texas school I'd never heard of, and he only became John Randall. So, you know, I get excited about this. So I'm very curious to hear what you see when you get to camp, because you're good at snap judgments at camp. I would like to know if which of the pass rushers they have. That's Van Ginkel, Grenard, and Turner now. Which one of them will be moved around to center? Because I feel like I'll be interested to see if Flores, with this trio of pass rushers, treats one of them as his sort of front seven Metellus. Because I feel like that's going to be a big thing. And then I want to know about Kyrie Jackson, because what you said was, or was it Trespasso? It was Trespasso who kept comparing him to Xavier Howard. And like, he said Xavier Howard enough times where I was like, okay, we got the next Xavier Howard. That's sweet. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so I'm curious to know about that. And I'm curious to know how the team feels about their cornerback room right now, like, because Blackman was serviceable last year, but was he good? Can he get better? I'd like to know that. You know, Metellus was very, very good, but, you know, are they going to start grooming him to replace Harrison Smith in a fixed position? I'd like to know about that. Are they happy with the linebacker situation right now? Because they have two, same as they had last year, right? So is that okay? Like, where you see the problems with this team, and it's been true for a while now, is a depth, right? And you were talking about how someone said, I think it was Greg Rosenthal told you, you need to have 40 good players on a roster to be a Super Bowl champion. I don't think that we are there yet, particularly on defense, right? So I would like to see, I'd like to know how the Vikings, or how we can suggest to the Vikings to get the most out of the, you know, quote unquote, good players on the roster. If there's 32 of them, if there's 38 of them, you know, Flores already showed last year that he will, if you are good, he doesn't give a shit what position you play. He's going to find a role for you. He's going to want you on the field, because having a guy who's sort of out of position on the field but is good is better than having a guy who sucks in a fixed position. So to me, there's a lot of, you know, it's almost like a word cloud of a roster. And I'm very interested to see, you know, how that's going to work. And then the other thing is, the other thing I'd like to know is, you know, we were talking about how intricate the offense was with Kevin O'Connell, and how, you know, it might take time for JJ to pick it up. There's two things about that. One is that we know Kirk took a while to pick it up, but TJ Hockenson picked it up within like 3 days. And part of that is because Kirk had to play quarterback, so you have to be master of everything. But also there is a distinct possibility that Kirk is dumb. And that is like, that's a hindrance. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, and he's a nice guy, decent fan, great husband and father, blah, 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 all that stuff. Great. But like, there is a possibility that he didn't grasp this stuff because he sucked at it. And JJ McCarthy may not be that sort of person. He may have a brain for this. But the other thing I'd like to know is if Kevin O'Connell is so much of a scheme guy that he is not willing to tailor this offense to this quarterback. And it seems already as if he is not going to dumb down a playbook. He's not going to give him a thin playbook to work with just so he can play. And we've seen that happen a lot in the pros, where he's a rookie, so we're going to give him, you know, these five plays and he can run those confidently and we'll just work with that. I don't think KO is that kind of guy. And I don't know if that's good or not, I think is what I'd like to hear.
I think, well, first of all, you gave me, that's like going to Cracker Barrel where the menu is like 8 pages long. And
yeah, am I
like,
giving you
okay,
a lot.
I got a lot to choose from there that you just laid out. But I think you can do it either way. I think you can have the scheme and need the quarterback to master it all. I think that's probably how Kyle Shanahan is. Or you could try to tailor it up. I think that he'll make some changes, but there's fundamentally things that he believes are going to work that you can't really alter, or then you're talking about hacking it down too far. So I would prefer that he has it all down and is ready to go to, hey, let's run out half the playbook and then start adding a little bit here or there. Now, with Josh Dobbs last year, not that I ever really cared about this, but I mean, you probably should have cut the playbook down and tried to operate that way, right? That should have happened last year, I think.
Or he should have stayed in his headset all game long, like he did in Atlanta, like, and just use him as a puppet. Like, it's kind of, you know, if you're not going to concede to someone who just got there and is your emergency starter, you know, I worry about that a little bit. I don't worry about, you know, his ability to relate to players or his knowledge of the game or anything like that. Like, it's nice to see your head coach on the sideline and not think that guy is a moron. And like, you know, if you're Mike McCarthy is your coach, that's kind of what you think when you're a fan, and you're not necessarily wrong to. But I'm more confident than Kevin O'Connell in that. I also like that he and Kwesi have both said openly, listen, we're learning how to do this job. And so we have to sort of look over what we, you know, what we've done wrong in past years and make sure that we're working on the correct things to improve ourselves. So that's good too. The perspective seems all right. So I don't want to hunt around for things to worry about. I'd like to know what my legitimate worries would be and what they are not and what's not legitimate.
Well, those will unveil themselves as we go along. So people will have to keep listening and reading to find out what they are.
Look at you.
That's how I built this
Ever
whole
the
empire.
Salesman.
That's right.
For you, brother.
Drew, defector, great to have you. Again, we'll definitely do it again at some point throughout the summer. You'll think of something you want to talk about, then I'll say, come on and talk about it, and we'll have a good time. So I really appreciate it, though. Appreciate your appearances. They've been lots of fun to follow this journey with you. It's a totally different perspective from other like hardcore football reporters and draft analysts and everything that come on that I think you give a voice to many fans who feel the same way as you. So
that's really, right. That's
you
right. Do. They should be grateful.
Yeah. They me. Should. Yeah. They should pay you instead of me, but they don't.
Yeah. No, I get paid. I'm more.
Okay. I'm going to stop talking now.
Pleasure to have you on. Goodbye. Pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me. It's always fun.